In 2014, a Columbia University student named Emma Solkovitz began carrying a 50-pound mattress everywhere she went on campus, to classes, to the dining hall, even to her graduation ceremony. Her Carry That Weight performance art protested what she described as the university's failure to expel the man she accused of rape. She became a media sensation, praised by the National Organization for Women, invited to the State of the Union, and compared to Christ carrying his cross. Yet there's a twist to this story that rarely makes headlines. The accused student was cleared by the university after an investigation, and Facebook messages revealed Emma had sent him warm, flirtatious texts after the alleged assault, even asking him to hang out a little bit before they hook up. This case reveals something unsettling about modern feminism. A movement that began with the righteous goal of equality has morphed into something that often denies biological reality, demonizes men, and ironically, leaves women less happy than before. Here's a paradox worth pondering. As women have achieved unprecedented freedoms and opportunities, their reported happiness has declined. Since 1990, women consistently report being less satisfied with their lives than men and less happy than their mothers and grandmothers were at the same age. What went wrong? Early feminism looked nothing like today's version. 19th century leaders like Frances Willard championed maternal feminism, believing women possessed unique qualities that could improve society. These pioneers fought for women's rights without declaring war on family. Then came the 1960s. Second-wave feminists crafted a revisionist history, portraying pre-feminist women as passive housewives trapped in domestic prisons. Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique claimed 1950s media reduced women to nothing but wives and mothers. The problem? It wasn't true. Historian Joanne Meyerowitz found only 15% of magazine profiles from 1946-1958 focused primarily on domesticity. The rest celebrated women as mayors, doctors, teachers, and athletes, achievements feminists conveniently erased. Between 1940 and 1956, married women working outside the home doubled from 15% to 30%. The revolution was already happening. Helen Gurley Brown's 1962 blockbuster, Sex and the Single Girl, encouraged women to pursue affairs with married men, calling sex yummy without restraint. But the sexual revolution was actually a massive con job, benefiting men, allowing them to enjoy sex without responsibility while calling it liberation. Even feminist Ellen Willis admitted the movement merely legitimized the age-old tendency of men to pressure women into sex without offering love, respect, responsibility, or erotic pleasure in return. Science confirms sex differences aren't purely social. Female infants respond more strongly to human distress and recognize faces earlier, while male infants fixate on geometric patterns. Women have more acute senses, denser brain centers for language, and larger hippocampi for processing emotion. Men's brains compartmentalize functions, particularly spatial reasoning, while women's distribute them more broadly. The most tragic proof came from a botched circumcision, where a boy was surgically reassigned as a girl and raised as Brenda. Despite never being told the truth, Brenda rejected feminine clothing and toys, eventually transitioning back to male. Even monkeys show sex-typical toy preferences, males gravitating toward trucks, females toward dolls, without any social conditioning. Today's feminists face a contradiction. They once denied sex differences entirely, but now must acknowledge male and female brains differ to accommodate transgender ideology, while insisting gender identity is separate from biological sex. We can acknowledge biological differences without claiming biology as destiny. Men and women have different strengths on average, but that doesn't limit individual choices or justify discrimination. College campuses have become territories where young people navigate sexual encounters without clear rules. The term hookup itself has no precise definition. It can mean anything from kissing to intercourse. Studies revealed 90% of unwanted sexual encounters happen during hookups, with excessive drinking involved in 76% of cases. Between 1999 and 2008, emergency room visits for dangerously intoxicated young women rose 52%, compared to just 9% for men. Boston College professor Carrie Cronin exposed hookup culture's emptiness by making dating a class assignment. The rules: ask in person, choose someone of genuine romantic interest, avoid movies, don't drink alcohol, the asker pays, end by 10 p.m. Students were nervous but grateful for guidance. Dating represents interest in the whole person, appreciating unique qualities rather than reducing someone to sexual potential. The Obama administration's 2011 Dear Colleague letter changed how universities handle sexual assault accusations, requiring the lowest standard of proof while removing protections like legal representation. Harvard Law School faculty protested these procedures lack the most basic elements of fairness and due process. The widely cited 1 in 5 statistic comes from a problematic survey defining assault so broadly it included giving in to sexual intercourse due to continual arguments and pressure. Feminists maintained hostility toward traditional families into the 21st century, with sites like Feministing declaring monogamy was shoved down our throats. Meanwhile, a massive social experiment unfolded. The 1965 Moynihan Report identified Black family deterioration as the single most important social fact in America. Though denounced as racist and sexist, Moynihan's warnings proved prescient. By 2013, unwed motherhood reached 71% for Blacks, 53% for Hispanics, and 36% for whites. Feminists were profoundly wrong about marriage. Far from a trap, marriage fulfills fundamental human needs. The data is clear. 43% of married adults report being very happy versus just 24% of singles. Marriage boosts mental health, wealth, physical health, and survival rates. About 40% of marriages end in divorce, with only 12% splitting amicably. The rest become bitter, angry associates or fiery foes. For children, consequences are severe. Those with one biological parent face higher risks of poverty, smoking, teen pregnancy, academic struggles, illness, and early death. The poverty rate for two-parent families is 6.8% versus 37.1% for single mothers. When Truman was president, only 5% of births were to unwed mothers. By 2014, that figure exceeded 40%. Marriage transforms men dramatically. Married men average twice as many close friendships, earn 10 to 40% more, drink 50% less alcohol, commit fewer crimes, suffer less depression, and participate more in community activities. Men bring unique masculine virtues to parenting. They're better disciplinarians, encourage reasonable risk-taking, and engage in rough-and-tumble play that helps children develop emotional regulation. When watching a child climb, mothers caution, "Be careful," while fathers encourage, "See if you can get to the top." Complementary approaches that benefit development. Family breakdown exacts a devastating toll. Economists Case and Deaton documented rising death rates among working-class, middle-aged white Americans, the group experiencing steepest family dissolution. Deaths from diseases of despair, suicide, drug overdoses, alcohol poisoning surged over 50% since 2000. Chronic loneliness tripled from 10% in 1985 to 33% by 2010, hitting unmarried men hardest. The chronically lonely die at twice the rate of the obese, suffering immune suppression equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes daily. Anne Marie Slaughter's 2012 Atlantic article, "Why Women Still Can't Have It All," ignited fierce debate. As Princeton's first woman dean, she left high-level government work for her teenage sons. Yet her piece missed the crucial question: what is the "it" we're trying to have? The wage gap narrative wrongly assumes women prioritizing family get the short end of the stick. Women typically choose people-oriented work with flexible schedules, while men pursue higher-paying positions as providers. Women now dominate helping professions. Veterinary medicine shifted from 5% female in the 1960s to 61% today. Among mothers with children under 18, only 27% would choose full-time work if money weren't an issue. America faces interconnected crises: rising inequality, behavioral problems in children, surging suicide rates, drug abuse, declining workforce participation, falling female happiness, epidemic loneliness, and soaring youth mental health disorders. Family breakdown appears to be the common thread. Ironically, feminism has turned marriage into a luxury good enjoyed primarily by college-educated elites who quietly follow the success sequence: education, marriage, then children. Young people following this path have only a 2% poverty rate. Yet many intellectuals resist marriage promotion, preferring to destigmatize single parenthood. Nothing about our situation is irreversible. We've seen declining divorce rates and reductions in drunk driving and teen pregnancy. America transformed from criminalizing homosexual acts to embracing same-sex marriage in just years. That's the power of cultural messaging applied to marriage and family stability. The path forward requires acknowledging uncomfortable truths. Humans are complementary males and females with different strengths. Sexual liberation primarily benefited men at women's expense. Children are treasures, not burdens. The deepest sources of identity, meaning, and joy aren't found in corner offices, but in our homes and families. In a culture celebrating independence, perhaps the most radical act is choosing commitment and building a family that demands everything and gives everything in return.